Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Welcome to Point of View and thank you so much to Gugu. Thanks everybody for joining us. This is Point of View. My name is Phemelo Modine and we'll be together until 10. Just a reminder that on a Wednesday, every Wednesday, we're joined by Ntabiseng Dubazana, who's our resident legal expert. And she literally answers every single legal question posed on the show without any costs, right? So nobody has to pay for it. It's all free. If she does not have an answer, what she usually does is she gets an expert to come in and explain and break it down for us. So take advantage of this. 086-000-00959. You can also send voice notes ahead of time. 063-688-0959. So if you can, send those questions in early so that she can have a look at them. And by the time we go to her at 9 o'clock, she's at least, you know, she's gone through all the necessary documentation. She can put together a comprehensive response for you. So send in all your legal questions for Ntabiseng Dubazana, who will be joining us just after 9 o'clock. It's 4 minutes after eight.
Point of View.
Discussing the world around you.
On the street.
On the air.
And at kaya959.co.za.
So we had the Minister of Finance present the budget, and it's a proposed budget, as you know. In fact, as you may remember, the very initial date when the minister was supposed to propose the budget, it didn't happen because there were murmurs about the fact that GNU partners were not in agreement. There was a postponement, and then he was able to then at a later date propose the budget. What that means, though, as I've been mentioning, it's a proposal. It's not the budget that we can take for granted will be voted for and will go through. The ANC then has been meeting various political parties to try and, you know, garner support to see if this can go through. Amongst those parties have been meeting is Build One South Africa. I want to know where they stand with this particular budget and are they going to support the ANC on this one? On the line with us is Build One South Africa leader, Musi Maimane. Mr. Maimane, thank you so much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening and good evening to fellow South Africans.
You, I believe, have met the ANC?
No. That meeting is scheduled. I wanted to make sure that we were clear up front that often when these coalition or even budget negotiations take place, they take place confidentially. They take place without the mandate of the people that you've committed to saying you will represent in Parliament. And so we felt it was important that rather than us going to have some secret arrangement, it's important for us to lay our objectives on the table to focus on a growth agenda. And then that meeting, as scheduled with the ANC, that the outcomes will also be made public so that South Africans can hold us all to account on the things we agree to do.
Okay, so you had already mentioned to the public some of the things that you would have proposed in the budget, and I want to give you an opportunity to go through those again prior, obviously, to your meeting with the ANC and publicizing what decisions you've come up with. Are you, maybe before that meeting, able to tell us whether you're likely to support the budget that was presented by the minister?
We remain open. South Africans want a budget. No one wants a country that is without a budget. And democracy is negotiated in and of itself. So I go into it open-minded in as far as what we need to do, but not flexible just on for the sake of it, because I've got to be clear, what are we fighting for? And we're fighting for a number of things. We're fighting for, the first thing is, we want a growth agenda. Keep in mind, the budget is over 3 years. That's why when the minister tables a medium-term budget policy statement, or even this budget, he takes it over the medium term. And therefore, there are some things that we need to make decisions about now that we will see its fruition in 3 years from now. For example, if you said, let's scrap the CETAs, as an example, to cut expenditure, because the CETAs aren't adding value, then you really have to do that in 3 years, and you'll see the fruit of it in 3 years. If you say, let's stop borrowing money and increasing debt, that's what we've got to do. That's why he announced the VAT increase over 2 years,
yeah,
because that's how the budget cycle works. So we were clear that we're not going to support VAT. We were clear that cabinet has to be cut in half so that we can give that money to SARS.
Mm.
We are clear up front to say that we need to confront some of the CETA conversation, as I've been saying,
mm-hmm.
and we need to really get bang for buck when it comes to issues about the National Empowerment Fund. We need to get bang for buck in how we manage senior managers in the public service. Mm. Because the public service is not suffering because it's got too many people, as others say.
Mm.
It suffers because people in senior management have had a bracket creep where they've had above inflation increases for 10 years, that they earn extraordinarily well at that level.
Mm-hmm.
But the productivity isn't always connected to the issue. So these things are important. And then facing the policy choices, because I think one of the things that's underwhelming about this budget is that it doesn't confront the genuine policy issues that we've got to look into so that South Africa can achieve the growth it needs. And so for us, we're going in there to say that's our position, so that we're not going there to negotiate other things. We want to narrowly speak about the budget.
Mr. Maman, before we get to some of the things that you've mentioned, let's start with the policy issues. Give me an example of some of the issues that they've neglected, the policy issues that they've neglected to address in this budget.
Well, you know, so when you face a fiscal crisis such as we have at the moment, where you've got limited wiggle room, you have to make some tough decisions. And one of the decisions we've got to look at is, if we don't increase VAT, can we also sustain the SRD grant, which comes in at about 36 billion rands? That's a policy decision. And part of it asks us the fundamental question, could we not deploy that 16 billion rands or that billion rands that is allocated towards the SRD towards saying, can we use a rail recovery program and create an employment scheme around that so that the beneficiaries of the SRD grant could in fact work to earn that money? And that way, you create employment, plus you keep the rail revitalization program on the go.
Mm.
Otherwise, you then create permanency on a grant, which, as the Constitutional Court has already ruled, that it has to be increased, I think, from 7 million beneficiaries to about 11.
Yeah.
That will create a fiscal blowout.
Except, Mr. Maimane, you would know that the ANC will tell you that this is very aligned with the policy position as the ANC.
Well, I think the ANC wants to pride itself at saying it runs a budget that is a 60% social wage budget.
Mm.
But in essence, the whole budget must be seen in that light, because people who are beneficiaries of state provision, in fact, benefit across the whole item that the government produces, whether it's safety, whether it's healthcare, education, etc. So I think that one, from an ANC point of view, unless they were thinking that it is their policy to introduce a basic income grant, it is one that they just are nervous to face the constituents, right? The second is, even on public sector wage negotiations, we, from a fiscal point of view, allocated 4.7% increases in the medium term.
Mm.
The negotiators went and set that at 5.5% in a multi-year deal.
Mm.
That is simply unsustainable or unaffordable at this stage. So that is a conversation that we need to have about whether do we in negotiations take the mandate from the workers, or do we, from a fiscal point of view, say this is what our wiggle room is, and therefore we negotiate within this parameter? Because that, if inflation is already at 3%, a 5.5% increase is an above inflation increase, and ultimately very few South Africans are getting it in these tough economic times.
The public sector, though, will partially agree with you, though, when you say, you know, let's cut the fat at the senior management level. Let's look at the frontline workers who usually don't get the benefits of some of the issues that you've raised and many others have raised, of corruption and so on. And so they would partially say to you, look, we're not responsible for budget misuse and funds being misused. Why should we pay the price for that? Today was such a march where, or at least it wasn't a march, but there was a deadlock of sorts where the public servants are saying, well, no, we are not at Transnet. We are not responsible for where Transnet is right now. Why should we have to pay for the price for people who are not being held accountable for all kinds of mismanagement?
No, and the two things can both exist and be correct.
Mm.
Those who are corrupt must be dealt with.
Mm.
That's not the debate. And I think actually VAT is a punishment for 10 years of state capture. You can't steal for 10 years and hope that the fiscus can sustain that. So that's a tax. But what I would want to say is to public servants, if we give a 5.5% increase, we must then keep in mind that the ratio in South Africa of the teacher to learner ratio is now sitting at 1:35. Compare that to Australia, which is 1:14. Compare that to Botswana, that number is less. It's 1:29. So the reality is, you can pay the ones who are working higher and higher and face the prospect of them teaching bigger and bigger classes because you can't increase the number of teachers. So these are things that we have to have honest conversations about as a society.
Yeah.
The ratio of doctors is literally 0.3 to 3,000 people, which means, in essence, we're running out of doctors to patient ratio. It's a stressful environment to be a doctor. And we've got unemployed doctors sitting at home. So unless you think through and say, can we increase the numbers at that lower level rather than paying people who are paying people higher and higher who are in management positions, it's unsustainable. And it's the same for policing, which is already at about 1:350, if I'm not mistaken, on that score. But that's only across the average of the country. If you went to Dobsonville or Soweto, my own township, you would get 1:1,200. So that ratio already tells you that policing then fails. That's why we have 75 murders a day in the last quarterly report. So I just think when we confront these issues, South Africa now cannot sit back and say we can afford to just do everything. We have to pick our priorities. And that's why what we're taking as an approach to the budget negotiations is to say, there's no longer that luxury that we have to even debate some of the ideological issues that are outstanding. We now have to cut a budget, make sure that budget can eventually one day get us to a net neutral budget. In other words, at this point in time, we're running a 5% deficit budget every year in the medium term. So in the third year, we've got to make sure that that is zero, so that ultimately you've got a balanced budget so that you can grow from there, so that you're not increasing debt, which crowds out your expenditure. But the ultimate thing is that even if you are to spend on infrastructure, let's make sure we fix municipalities, because if I don't fix them, I can invest in building a bridge in Kabeja. But the reality is that 89 million rands went into that project, and still I sit here today with money deployed, but no bridge. So infrastructure build, even though we will spend over a trillion rand in the medium term on infrastructure, it runs the risk of being money after bad municipalities, which will ultimately deliver no good.
And in fact, to that point, I was going to ask you, you know, what would be your proposition to how we assist municipalities? They keep sending money back to Treasury because they don't know how to use it. Better yet, others don't even know how to apply for that money. There are many, many problems. You would know those problems. But as you said, you know, infrastructure alone is not going to fix the problem. What do you think municipalities need to get them going, you know, and being productive?
So the Editor General would say that annually there's 52 billion municipalities on wasteful and fruitless expenditure. There are over 250 odd municipalities. Let's look at the ultimate culprits and ask ourselves the question, could we not take 52 billion rands, go to an institution like SAICA or the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants or another one of those, and say, what we are asking for is for all your graduates to spend a year working in municipalities so that they can build skill and competence. Could we not halve that 50 billion? I mean, my absolute
just on that point, Mr. Maimane, at the level of an entry level graduate, you know, that's not really the problem. So some of the issues of corruption are sitting at senior level, at executive level. So there would have to be a 360-degree kind of focus on dealing with this corruption and other problems that the municipalities face.
Undeniably, but the Auditor General would tell you straight that more municipalities are starting to turn around their audit opinions. So that is becoming a different problem. The problem that we've got at the moment is in management practice, they call it CYA, and I don't think it's appropriate for me to say this in radio, but the reality is people are now no longer making decisions, so they pass them up to the top.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's lease agreements, whether it's building permits, whether it's all of those things at municipalities, decisions have simply not been made. So the net consequence of it is you end up with stagnation and ultimately it cripples the municipality. The call again is let's move from freedom rhetoric to governance rhetoric, because that will ultimately safeguard our freedom. But if we fail the governance test, I can assure you we will undermine our freedom gains, because it's only a matter of time before people start to say, well, maybe the constitution is a problem. And then they start to other people, they start to say, maybe it's this race or that, if we don't govern properly for the future. And my call is, that's why when we go into these budget negotiations, we've got to be deliberate to say, let us, the capability of the state was eroded. And so if we're going to rebuild it, let's build on the right foundations, the appropriate goals for growth. And so that when you talk a thesis, if I was speaking to an investor anywhere in the world, I can say to them, South Africa is going to build rail between Gauteng and Bloemfontein and the Northwest and Mpumalanga. Come partner with us. You invest. We'll give you the concessions to make sure that you can run the rail system. But what we need is that public infrastructure for the people. Because the other truth is, as we pay citizens financially to go to work, so much of people's money is spent in just transport costs getting from home to work. So if we gave them an effective public transport system, which one of the things that are really positive in this budget is that there's bigger deployment of capital towards the Ministry of Transport for signaling, that will assist us in being able to make sure that we reduce, if you like, the burden that consumers have to face in being able to pay for transport, which will help a disposable income in households.
Do you think that would really support your 5% growth target argument?
Well, the thing is, growth is bought, and it has to be savings for it. There has to be savings to buy that growth. And so you are not going to grow if you crowd out investment by the state either being the primary supplier of that investment, or secondly, when your infrastructural issues are not in place. So if you're not going to grow without energy. So when we have load shedding, we must all realize that that is money that is going out of our growth potential. The IMF projects the fact that just South Africa loses 1% of GDP growth as a function of corruption. So we lose that. And I can go example by example. So if we were to fix the corruption aspect, make sure our rail infrastructure is effective, and ensure that the lights stay on permanently, and fix municipalities in making sure water is delivered, I think we could begin to look at a 3% growth trajectory all the way up to 5%. Because here's the advantage, that here are the cycles we cannot miss. When we hit another commodity cycle, South Africa needs to be available to do that, whatever the mineral is, which we are mining and being able to do. So we have to achieve that. And then the second is, on the youth unemployment point of view, in a continent of 1.4 billion, the median age of 23 means we've got a lot of young people who are available to work. So the trick is, what are we doing in our trade with Africa and maximizing the Africa Free Trade Area? It will be impactful for Africa, for South Africa, if we can begin to be a net exporter of our goods, particularly into the... So the opportunities are there. The issue is, we have a state that's incapable, we lack goals, we are not clear about what our targets exactly are, and that's why even on foreign policy, people feel they can make statements left, right and center, because no one is quite clear what we are trying to achieve.
Curtailing the SOE bailouts, it's a chicken and an egg thing. If we don't have a functioning ESCOM, to your point, we won't have growth. So you know, how far is this going to have to go?
Well, I think SOEs cannot be all put in the same basket. ESCOM has a particular unique role in society, and I think the ESCOM redesign is something that's long overdue. We'd already looked at how we can split ESCOM into three entities, so that the generation business does something else, the distribution business does something else, etc. So Eskom Holdings, that's a different proposition. But we've got all of these other SOEs that we can talk about till the cows come home that are not delivering the necessary value. I think we could do better on SAA, and that should be a net contributor, not one that is going to go into bailouts. I think there are other, whether it be Denel, whether it be the post office, and the list goes on, of ones that are woefully underperforming. And what we keep doing is to just simply keep bailing them out. But we don't do the hard work of either reforming them, picking leadership that can work there, and ultimately ensuring that they deliver profit. There is no reason today, and this is for me something I feel deeply, deeply, I want to say disappointed at the government about, because Porsche and the former CEO and CFO of Transnet were all given massive handouts or golden handshakes for their departure. But when you look at the state of those institutions, you couldn't quite say they did a job deserving of those bailouts, of those golden handshakes. So if we reward bad behavior, we are going to achieve the net outcomes of what we see. And I don't want to impugn anyone. I really want to be clear that we've got to align bonus payments with competent delivery. And Transnet is a prime example of people being rewarded, but the institution is dysfunctional at the level that it is.
2% cut in provincial spending, you're going to be very unpopular with that one. Your reasoning behind that?
On provinces?
Yes, on provinces.
Yeah, I think there are many provinces that are under-delivering on their mandates. I have a view on the state of provinces. If I had it my way, certainly in the long term, this is a 5-year project, I'd have provinces reduced, because I think they create layers of complication. They create, when you look at provinces' cost of employees, they are higher relatively. You can arrive at certain departments and end up with the biggest line item being cost of employees rather than the function of what it does. And furthermore, you have this unique problem where at a national government, you can set up the NYDA or the the National Empowerment Fund. You can set up the IDC. And then if you go to provinces, they've also got their own funding mechanisms of whatever kind they are. So isn't that a duplication of function and money? And then you have to staff for each of those entities across. So if we were to create a cut around these provinces, we would be able to say, let's be aggressive at how we deal. And it doesn't have to be universally so. Because certain provinces, I think about Gauteng, Gauteng's budget shortfalls are going to have to be dealt with, because ultimately Gauteng has absorbed the debt around the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project, which, whilst the roads are in Gauteng, but they are beneficiary of the national asset. But Gauteng has had to absorb that. But I can take you to another province, go to the Free State, see its collapse, yet money is going there, and actually municipalities are dysfunctional and the province is not any better. Why do we keep pumping money into that space unless you are willing to apply a Section 139 process where you either put municipalities under administration or ultimately set that province in a way that says we've got to revitalize Mangaung and the provincial government there, otherwise we are about to lose that province in essence. So for me, can't keep doing more of the same, adjusting for inflation and hoping for different outcomes. South Africa has grown at less than 1% for the last 10 years. If that is not a warning to say, change what you are doing, because in essence, all of us, because as debt balloons, South Africans are also feeling the pinch of it. All of us are collectively getting poorer. And I think that's conditions we cannot sustain.
You want us to review and close some diplomatic missions. How would we decide which country to pull out of?
That's one of the that's the easiest actually to achieve, because actually this is, you have to be dispassionate about these things. You have to eventually say to yourself, what is the trade relation here? So clearly we're not going to close a diplomatic mission with the US, the EU, or China, because the trade relations represent volumes and billions of US dollars. But do we need an embassy in certain countries where we are getting very low return on investment, if not minimal? We are comparatively, for the size of our economy, have got closer to similar numbers to what the USA has. It has 300 million people. We have 60. Its economy is that much bigger than ours, and yet we keep the same ambassadorial or diplomatic missions in a similar state. I just think that's not bang for buck. I really think that we need to think hard about going, if you are not delivering the trade, we don't need a mission here. And those are things we can do over the medium term, because they will achieve a sense upon which we can say, rather we can do regionalization. If you took a country, i.e. like Germany, it has an ambassador here in South Africa, but that ambassador services the SADC region. So we must think ourselves hard to say, well, actually, we're not just going to keep an ambassador everywhere for the sake of it. We've got to keep one where there's trade relations that actually represents.
I would want to put you on the spot on this one, because we have a country, for instance, with like Cuba, where our relations may not necessarily be trade relations so much, but really there's massive history and the relations there are very, very strong with South Africa.
You know, the surest way to end up backwards is to keep looking there. And I'm not denying the fact that we've had a history with Cuba. Placing an ambassador doesn't necessarily cement or undermine that. We can do it from Pretoria. So I certainly think that that cost doesn't justify the benefit. And if you want to keep relations with countries, there's nothing unique about saying, well, we're not going to put an ambassador there. We will certainly put one that is regional over multiple countries, and then we'll take it from there. Mm-hmm. And I think that given the ANC's relationship with Cuba, yeah, I don't think necessarily that must be something that could translate into the political interest or the governance framework of the South African government in its long run. Because at the end of the day, whilst you might think we honor the ANC's historic relations, and Cuba played a powerful role in that regard, when we take on a governance framework, we must acknowledge that now we're using the resources and the interest of all South Africans, not just of one party.
Just one last question around the consolidation of government agencies you speak of, for instance, SA Tourism, Proudly South Africa and the like. And your suggestion is that maybe we have one agency, consolidate all of that, but we'd also be losing jobs there.
You know, this is the thing. Citizens are losing jobs. That's the reality. Now, the question is, often people say, well, don't add to that by reducing the state jobs. I'm going, well, it then becomes an unfair proposition to put to people to say, if you are in government, we will protect you, we will pay you more, whether you do any work or not, whereas you, the South African, must then continue to lose your jobs, face high inflation, and we will even tax you higher if you go to work. I think it's an unfair choice to make. Rationalizing these agencies, again, I look at it in the medium term to say, this year we finish agency, because at the end of the day there's duplication of work. I've already pointed that the mandate of the National Empowerment Fund and the mandate of the IDC are nearly similar in what they seek to achieve in benefiting for historically disadvantaged people. So could we not pool the money together and achieve more, rather than having separate agencies that are almost self-serving rather than serving the public? And it is true in all of these branding exercises, because in truth, if we were to look at our tourism numbers relative to what municipalities do, etc., we have to ask ourselves, are we not underperforming in that space? South Africa is a beautiful country. Rather than having all of these agencies here, I would rather be placing adverts in India, in Beijing, to make sure we enhance Asian and Indian tourism into South Africa and actually making it possible to revitalize that. But having an agency here with people who are well paid to sit on boards really and deliver low is unsustainable.
As usual, always lovely talking to you. Thank you very, very much, Mr. Musi Maimane, today speaking to us in his capacity as Build One South Africa leader.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.